You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. So the news of the day, Shams Charania of The Athletic reporting that the Miami Heat have expressed interest as a potential trade partner to acquire Andre Iguodala from the Memphis Grizzlies. It's a bit surprising. Iguodala, at age 36, was traded to the Memphis Grizzlies during the past offseason. He was no longer part of the plan in Golden State with the loss of Kevin Durant. The Warriors decided they needed to retool, and hence they wanted to clear up some cap space in order to sign D'Angelo Russell, who they might be looking to move in a potential trade of their own, but that doesn't really impact Miami. The news of the day, obviously, is that Iguodala may or may not be on Miami's radar. It's something I've talked about before. I talked about this with Mark King, host of Locked On Grizzlies. We actually went through some potential trade scenarios on why the move would make some sense for Miami or why it might not make some sense for Miami. And that's what I'll be doing on today's show. I want to get into the benefits of adding Andre Iguodala, why Miami might do it. I will also get into why they shouldn't do it, why there are problems associated with Iguodala and what his impact on the floor would be. And then I'll get into some more news and notes about what the Heat might do about Iguodala and what it means about the team in general and the fact that they're willing to add a veteran like Andre Iguodala. So I thought about getting into the pros first, but I feel like my first tendency, as I tweeted out earlier this morning when I saw the news first happen, was that I am somewhat negative about the move. So I'm going to get into the negative first, but then get into the pros later on, and maybe that might change my perspective a little bit. I certainly want to leave you all with a more positive taste than what I may, originally have felt regarding the news about Andre Iguodala. So there are some cons there. He just turned 36 years old. He is 36 years old and 7 days, according to Basketball Reference. So there are concerns about his age there. He is also somewhat limited in what he does. And we're used to seeing Andre Iguodala on a much bigger stage because, of course, the Golden State Warriors have been in the finals for the past 5 seasons. And they won 3 championships during that time span. Iguodala was a part of that. He is a big part of what helped unlock the Golden State Warriors, in addition to Draymond Green's incredible success there. And something that we've been able to see from Heat players in the past is that when they are in Eric Spoelstra's system, they tend to flourish a little bit. You look at a player like Wayne Ellington, Tyler Johnson, etc. And those players are unlocked while they're in Miami because there is a specific role for them. There is a specific fit that they fill. And Iguodala was very similar to that. Somewhat older, athletic, able to switch onto multiple opponents in a way that we had not seen for much of the the league's history. I think Chris Bosh was one of the first players to do it. Draymond was certainly along that same model there. We saw Al Horford do things like this. And then Iguodala is more of a perimeter-based switchy defender, kind of like Justice Winslow. And so I think that's a big reason why he was able to flourish at this big stage. He guarded LeBron James well in Golden State's first championship in 2015, and he earned Finals MVP during that span. But, the system in Golden State and what Steve Kerr has implemented there was meant to maximize what every player on that roster can do. That's not to say that Steph Curry isn't an MVP-type player, but, you have concerns about Draymond and what he can do because he may not be a lights-out shooter. He is an okay shooter, and at sometimes he's been a bad shooter. And you could say the same thing about Iggy. He is a player that struggles from the field. He is about a 33% career three-point shooter on just about two attempts per game. So it's something that has come, he's fluctuated. He's had some seasons where he's been 37%, others where he's been 28%, and so on. He was a 33% shooter last season at about 2 attempts per game. And that's in line with what his career averages are. So I think that's basically what you're getting is a guy who can and will shoot the three-point shot on occasion, even in the playoffs where everybody expects him to have big games and rise to the occasion. He's about a 35% shooter during his playoff stint last season. And so I don't know that the it might seem more apocryphal to say that Iguodala is a guy who rises to the big stage. It's, you know, a lot of players gain these kinds of reputations for being big on the big stage. And Iguodala, look, he did well in 2015. He guarded LeBron well. He's had some big shots, but he's also been very limited, and it certainly benefits to him to play alongside at least three players in Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry, who will be in the Hall of Fame, and potentially a fourth in Draymond. And Iguodala himself may even be scratching at that Hall of Fame door at some point in his future. But it's hard to say exactly what Iguodala is capable of being outside of Golden State, because that's the lens we view him in over the last few seasons. In Miami, I'm not so sure what his role is. I'm not sure what you'd be giving up there. And that's part of my concern, is that you'd be breaking into Miami's young core. I'm not sure that you're going to give up a guy like Justice Winslow in order to acquire Andre Iguodala for a few months. I'm not sure that you want to give up anything else of consequence, anyone else of consequence. And I hate breaking it down this way, because to me it is always problematic to speak of players as assets and guys that can be traded away when their lives are going to be potentially uprooted. And you can look to Iguodala as a case in point, because he did not want to play in Memphis this season, which is why we are at this point in his career right now, and where he could be potentially in a Heat roster by the end of this week. He signed a three-year extension to play in Golden State. They went to the finals, won one championship with KD there, lost the following season when KD was hurt, when Klay was hurt, etc. And so it was the second of 3 years of his contract. And again, as I mentioned before, they were looking to kind of boost the offense a little bit. Iguodala was a little bit older, and they were ready to move on from him. So they traded him to Memphis, and he did not want to play there. And so he was not happy with the decision. He came to an agreement with the Grizzlies front office and said, trade me to a contender. It's probably going to be my last season in the NBA. I want to retire. I want to play for a team and compete for a championship, because that's what makes me happy at this point in my career. Golden State wasn't going to be a legitimate contender with Klay injured, with Durant gone, trying to incorporate Russell, etc. Not to mention the fact that Steph Curry wound up breaking his hand a couple months into the season. So, you know, it was not an ideal situation for Iguodala and Golden State there. But either way, he wants to be part of a title contender. And I'm not so sure that Miami is a title contender. And I think it's something that a lot of people can agree with. And there's no guarantee that Iguodala would want to play here. So I would imagine that Pat Riley would probably speak to Iguodala directly, that he would be able to smooth over any concerns there. And that he could probably convince Iguodala to play one last season here, the way so many other players like Rashard Lewis, Ray Allen, etc., play during, you know, LeBron James' tenure in Miami. But it's not a foregone conclusion, and so there are some concerns there. And I think that's what you're overall looking at, is a player that might be disgruntled, that has a limited skill set at this point in his career, that is a little bit older, that you might have to sacrifice too much for, that his hype may not necessarily match what his performance is. And look, I will accede to the fact that, you know, he's been out for most of the season. He's been out for the whole season, and so he's rested. He's probably working out diligently, because that's just the kind of person and player that he is, and athlete that he is. And so he might come into Heat camp pretty fantastic, in fantastic shape. Or not camp, but he might come into the Heat roster and be an immediately impactful player. But that's also hard to see. He plays 23 minutes per game in last season when he was in Golden State. Will that cut into other players on this team's playing time? Will he cut into Goran Dragic's playing time? Will he cut into Tyler Hero's playing time, et cetera, et cetera? It's hard to envision what his fit on this roster will be, because Eric Spoelstra does tend to prefer putting veterans and you know, having the opportunity to get more playing time, especially for a guy like Iguodala with three championships under his belt. So there are concerns about Iguodala, which is why my tendency was to be a little bit negative about the rumors or the reports regarding Miami's interest. But I'll have to dispel those in the next segment when I get into why Miami might benefit from acquiring a player like Andre Iguodala. Stay tuned for that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Do you want to win two tickets to see your favorite team in their home arena? then guess an NBA trade perfectly before it happens. You can pre-bomb the Woj Bomb. Go to any of the Locked On NBA Net accounts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, post a trade you think will happen, and then tag five people with your trade in the post. If you're right, then you have a chance to win two tickets to see your favorite team play in their home arena. Trades will be evaluated based on players and picks, not cash. If multiple players win, the first person with the correct trade is the winner. One winner will be chosen across all Locked On social accounts. If no one guesses the exact trade, the winner will be the one closest to whatever that post was. So go now and pre-bomb the Woj Bomb with your trade deadline trade at Locked On NBA Net. So as I mentioned, this segment will be all about the positives of potentially acquiring Andre Iguodala, something that I wasn't completely on board with, but there is a case to be made, and perhaps a pretty strong one, that Iguodala might be a great fit on Miami's roster. He is 36 years old, but as I mentioned before in the first segment, he's been out for most of the season. He's barely above 35. He's probably pretty healthy, pretty rested, and the fact that his minutes were limited during his tenure in Golden State means that he's probably a lot fresher. He is a young 36. He's in absolutely great shape. We know that he's always been an incredible athlete. He finishes at the rim at a high level, mostly because he can still dunk and get up there at a point in time when a lot of players are starting to break down and not able to finish with a flourish the way Iguodala can. So he absolutely could finish at the rim. And again, he still has quite a bit of athleticism left to him, enough to play defense at a high level and enough to score at the rim at a high level. So there are benefits there. I think the biggest overall positive about adding Iguodala would be his championship experience. One of my concerns with this Miami Heat roster has been having to rely on guys like Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, etc. Young players that have not tasted what a playoff intensity will be like. And we don't know what these players will be like under those brightest of lights, under the scrutiny of a playoff-type series, having to make adjustments in a seven-game series. It's up to Eric Spoelstra and the coaching staff to help those players along the way, but they also have to figure it out on the fly. That's just the reality of life in the NBA, is they have to be able to make adjustments. They have to put in the time. They have to be confident enough in themselves to make that kind of leap in between these situations, like in-game situations. They have to be able to figure out, this is what I need to do. I'm ready for this moment. I'm built for this. And while some players may respond to it, others do not. Even players that are great during the regular season. I mean, look, Kyle Lowry is a very, very good player. And I think nobody would deny that. And there is a very good case that he is a Hall of Fame type player. But he has struggled at times during the playoffs, probably through no fault of his own. His shot has faltered. He hasn't been as effective. He hasn't made the same impact. Last year, I think he did a lot to dispel those ideas because he was able to be a secondary factor on the Toronto Raptors team that won a championship. So it's possible that we could see these young players like Nunn and Hero and Duncan kind of struggle a little bit when they get into the playoffs. We know what Iguodala is going to do. He's been to this before. He's been an Olympian. He's been in the NBA Finals for five consecutive years. He knows exactly what it takes to get here. He can go into that locker room today and make an immediate impact because he's able to coach these guys and say, this is what you need to do. He could be a mentor. He could be a voice of reason. He could be another guy that can take over in that locker room and add to a voice like Jimmy Butler's and Bam Adebayo's and Goran Dragic's and say, this is what it takes to get to this point. And I think there's something very powerful in that. And I think the guys in this locker room, whoever stays behind if a trade for Iguodala is consummated, they're going to be able to listen to him. I think anybody on that roster can respect what Iguodala, the player, has done because he is an all-star, because he's a finals MVP, because he is a gold medalist, because he's accomplished everything he has. You take that voice seriously. And so there is absolutely some power in that. And I think everybody in that Heat locker room respond. You know, he did play 68 games the previous season. So he used to average almost close to 80 games a season. And then as his career has gone on, he's had a couple minor injuries here and there, some ankle issues, I think a neck injury at some point, shoulder injury. They've kind of chipped that way at his overall productivity. But he's still been a player that's been mostly available for Golden State. He just, quite honestly, he wasn't somebody that was essential there. They could miss a bunch of games from Steph Curry and still be able to thrive at a high level. They could miss Kevin Durant for a number of games and somebody else would step up into his place. So that's just the benefit of having that kind of a talented roster. And so there's a good chance that Iguodala would have played more if it was a different team. But the overall point is that he's been relatively healthy over the last couple of years despite his age. And I think he could still be that, again, because of the rest he's had over the last few months. He can come into Miami and make an immediate impact. He does provide, of course, some pretty high-level defense. He's switchable. He is a lot like Justice Winslow. You could see him moving on to bigger fours and still being able to shut down point guards and things of that sort. Might be a little slower at this point in his career, but he still does a very good job of being able to switch. And so between him, Jimmy, Bam, and a number of other players in this roster, you have a very versatile defense there that can do a lot. And I think he will help unlock Miami's defense to another level if he's healthy and able to contribute right away. He is a pretty solid passer. He can handle the ball on occasion. He's not very good at creating offense off the dribble. It's never been his strong suit. He's a finisher at the rim, but he's, you know, not at that elite level. Has never been throughout the course of his career. He's just been a very, very good athlete. So his dribble has always been a work in progress. It's gotten better. He can put the ball down on the floor. But that's not to say that he's not a capable playmaker as well, because again, Golden State's roster, it's easy to kind of dish it out to the guys on the perimeter, and you know that dudes like Klay Thompson and Steph are going to knock those shots down, and Kevin Durant as well. So, you know, he's also a guy who's experienced what playoff like is like, and this is, as Miami is gearing up over the next couple of months, it's about tightening the screws a little bit, about understanding what the goal is here. And I think that's a big part of what acquiring Iguodala would be for Miami, is making a commitment to winning a title this year. And that's a huge step for this franchise, because I don't think that was where we saw each other in July when they signed Jimmy Butler. It was a move that a lot of people around the country decried, because, you know, Jimmy was going to go quote-unquote retire in South Beach. He was going to a losing team. It wasn't a team immediately as built for winning as Philadelphia was, the team he was just on. And so when Miami makes a move, a win-now move, that's the goal, to win now. And so to acquire Andre Iguodala is absolutely something that fits into that category of wanting to win right away and make a push in these playoffs. So there's a lot to unpack there. I've laid out the cons. I've laid out the pros. Next, I'll talk about what Miami will actually do and some final thoughts regarding what happens regarding Andre Iguodala. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and a review, especially if it's a good one. So this is probably the toughest of the two segments. It's easy to lay out a case one way or the other, because those are just the facts. You can extrapolate those, you can interpret those however you like, but the reality is that you lay out a foundation for a pro or con and kind of let the numbers or that case speak for itself. But trying to decide exactly what Miami will do, and maybe more importantly what they should do, is a whole other matter. Despite everything I said, I cannot help but think that it is a hasty move. And that might be something that I'm personally opposed to, hastiness of any sort. It just does not seem to make a lot of sense. I don't know what you have to give up, and I think this is the biggest overall concern for me, is that you might be giving up on a potentially young player that could have an impact. Is it worth acquiring Andre Iguodala in order to trade away Justice Winslow, Derrick Jones Jr., Deion, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk? That's probably what it entails. You don't want to include a draft pick. You don't want to include a guy like Tyler Hero. I don't think you would want to give up a guy like Duncan Robinson, because he's one of the top three-point shooters in the league. He's a guy that plays well off of Iguodala's skill set. So what is it that you're giving up? If you're giving up Winslow, I still think it's a little harsh, unless the Heat front office knows something about his lingering back issues and whether or not he'll be an impactful player. Some of what Justice's prolonged benching, I think there's some of it tied to his injury, without a doubt. But it also kind of reminds me a little bit about how the franchise viewed Josh McRoberts. If you recall, McBob struggled in his tenure in Miami. His contract was kind of an albatross. He was a great player, a good player, let's say. A good player when Miami acquired him a free agency in 2014. And he was supposed to be kind of what Boris Diaw was for the San Antonio Spurs the year previously when Miami lost to the Spurs in the NBA Finals. However, LeBron James' departure to Cleveland in 2014 changed that pretty dramatically, and McRoberts went through a number of lingering issues with his health, a blister on his foot, knee injuries, shoulder injuries. It just seemed like he could never stay healthy for a prolonged period of time. But more than anything else, I think what the Heat front office and the coaching staff resented a little bit about McBob was that he was never fully absorbed into basketball. Like, they want somebody that lives it, breathes it, spits it out, shits it out, just inhales basketball 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And they may claim otherwise. They want guys to be good community members, to be impactful in charity work and things of that sort. But the reality is that they want you to be fully committed to basketball for a good amount of time. I don't think Justice fits that mold. The more that we see of Justice and what his interests are, he's a little outside. He thinks outside the box. I think he likes video games. He likes food. He likes art. He likes photography. He likes being an individual. And that might not necessarily fit in Miami. And I think the front office and the coaching staff may have concerns about Justice's commitment to basketball on a full-time basis. And you couple that with whatever the lingering issues regarding his health have been over the last four seasons, and maybe it's enough to say, I'm willing to move on. I like Justice Winslow. I like his personality. I like his skill set. Some long-term listeners will remember that I thought he might potentially be a bust. Just because I never really a bust was not necessarily the right terminology to use. I just didn't know that he'd live up to being a top 10 lottery pick, despite the fact that he was supposed to be a top 5 pick in that draft. Just because I didn't, a lot of the same concerns that I'm seeing right now, I didn't think he was fully engaged. We've seen in limited spurts a version of Justice where he is totally locked in, where he is engaged, he wants to make an impact, he wants to be a badass, and we saw it against Philadelphia a couple seasons ago, and I was so encouraged by that. That was the version of Justice that I had wanted to see earlier in his career. He just never was that, and I wonder if Miami is starting to doubt whether or not he'll reach those levels again. And so if they're willing to move on from Justice, because there are legitimate concerns there, not just some petty ass, you know, belief system or anything like that. If there are legitimate concerns about whether or not he's going to be healthy or make that kind of a transition into a full-time committed basketball player, I can understand why the move is necessary. There are benefits of adding a guy like Iguodala. He does have the skills. He does have the experience. There are a lot of things there. I forgot to mention the fact that he is a free agent after this year. You're not committing any kind of huge salary cap space to adding Iguodala, and you can move on from guys next year. You can add another player. You can start to clear up space where you can get another short-term salary next year and still keep 2021 alive and well. So there are options there. There's a lot to say about adding Iguodala and why it makes sense. And I think there's also the realities I hinted at in the last segment, that by adding Iguodala, you're committing to winning a championship. That is the statement that you're putting out to your players, to your fans, to the rest of the league. And I have concerns, though, because you're hearing about teams like Toronto and Brooklyn and Indiana and everybody else that's within that 1-8 range in the Eastern Conference. They're also looking to make moves. Milwaukee has been tied to adding a guy like Robert Covington that I spoke about a couple weeks ago as a potential great fit in Miami. Covington would make a huge impact there if you can give up very little from Milwaukee's side, and he can be a guy who's a solid perimeter defender and three-point shooter who helps take that team to another level. And so he's a switchable defender, et cetera, et cetera. There's benefits of having Covington there, and it'd be a great fit in Miami, but then a lot of those are what Iguodala brings to the table as well. My concern is whether or not if you're looking at Milwaukee and potentially Toronto as the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, and I never thought we'd say that. We have Boston as a strong third candidate and Miami somewhere in that tier, kind of maybe on the outskirts and right above Indiana and Philadelphia in some ways, not just because that's where they currently are in the standings, but because of their overall talent and some trends that we've noticed of late regarding their defense and things of that sort. Is the move to acquire Iguodala enough to put you into contention? Is it enough to make trading away a guy like Justice and whatever his potential might be worth it? Are you ready to move on from whatever it is that you currently are right now, a team that's fun, that shoots well, etc., in order to acquire a guy like Iguodala? There are questions there. Look, I will say also, from a personal perspective, and I mentioned this before, and I apologize if it sounds repetitive, but I like talking to guys in the locker room. I've liked having conversations with them. And perhaps that's a unique perspective that you don't share. I think as fans, you start to see things peripherally. You see, you know, little bits and pieces here of what their personalities are going to be like via social media, etc. It's a little odd sometimes to be talking to a player one day and then the next they're just gone. And so I you know, it is, as I get older, perhaps I'm getting a little bit more nostalgic or sentimental, whatever word you want to have it. I am more resistant to trades in reality. They sound great in concept. They make for great conversations on this podcast, obviously. But I hate to see them in practice because I've talked to players so many times about what it's like to be traded. There was a story today, I think, on NBA.com regarding Kelly Oubre and how he found out after a game that he was traded away to another team, that he was traded to the Phoenix Suns. This was a 22, 23-year-old player at this time, that same draft class as Justice Winslow. And he came out of the showers after a game, and John Wall and Markieff Morris and Bradley Beal surrounded him and broke the news to him and told him, look, you've been traded. And it's hard for a young player. Like he makes a great point in that article regarding how the league and fans and coaching staffs want full disclosure from players, but they don't necessarily reciprocate when it comes to that. So I understand his perspective because I've talked to guys about this before, and so it is a little difficult for me to swallow that actual transaction taking place there. Having said all this, right now, based on what we're hearing, I have to tell you, I think the move happens. I really do. For Miami to be linked as a potential trade partner with Memphis just makes too much sense. It shouldn't be something that's publicized out there, and yet it is. And given all that, I'd have to say there's a very good chance of it happening. We've heard about this for months. We've talked about it before in this podcast. It just seems like a move that Miami and Miami's culture and Miami's front office has always done throughout the course of Pat Riley's tenure here. Acquiring a proven veteran that has championship experience is always going to be something that this front office does. And if you have to give up on a player that hasn't necessarily proven their worth, you make that change 100 times out of 100. That's just the reality. You gave up on Lamar Odom, who you signed as a free agent. You gave up on Caron Butler. You gave up on Glenn Rice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Glenn Rice won a championship with the Lakers. Lamar Odom won a championship with the Lakers. But Pat Riley gave up on those for Alonzo Mourning. He gave up on those for Shaquille O'Neal. And both of those players wound up winning championships. So it's a good opportunity for Miami to get something of value and perhaps to provide something of value for whatever players are sent there. I'd like to see what Justice Winslow could do elsewhere if he's included in a trade. So, you know, here it is. I'm recording this on a Tuesday night. We're 2 days away from the trade deadline. A lot can happen over the next couple of days, and there's no way of knowing for certain whether or not Miami does consummate this kind of deal. But I have to say, given my gut instinct, my hunch, is that it'll happen, that Andre Iguodala will be in a Heat uniform by the end of the week. That's hard to say. It's strange to say, but that's the reality. In the meantime, however, the Heat are back on the floor in Los Angeles when they face the Clippers on Wednesday night. So check back here for a recap after the game. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.